Xenos Extremis. Teleportation is far from an exact art. It relies on small-scale localized manipulation of the immaterium, and no part of that mysterious realm is entirely predictable. Even when performed under ideal conditions, things can go wrong. When activated from a warship coming under heavy fire and pushing its engines to move it as fast as possible, something is far more likely to go wrong than not. Squads can be widely dispersed, delayed for no apparent reason, or even disappear completely. Sometimes, despite all the fail-safes built in, troops can end up materializing within solid structures, leading to the most gruesome of deaths. None of us suffered that fate, but that was because we materialized some 15 meters above the ground. I didn't know whether this was an error on the part of Cunatex or the equipment, or whether the Majors had decided upon this course of action to minimize the chance of us scattering into ground-level debris. Whatever the reason, we fell towards the chewed-up ground of Bar Savor with, I was proud to realize, nothing more than a couple of terse curses from the Astartes with me. There was a dull thunk of ceramite on ceramite as Dersius kicked out at Gukul. A spike of sheared metal, wickedly sharp at its upper edge, reared up from the ground and could easily have impaled the librarian as he fell. Instead, Dersius's blow had knocked them apart in midair, and although they landed hard on their side and front, respectively, neither of them ended up atop it. Eltan Highmore, Jar Tenor, and I had easier landings, as our armour absorbed the force of the impact on our legs. The Lernians were less fortunate. The greater protection of tactical dreadnought armour comes with far greater weight, and it is designed for an implacable advance under heavy fire, not acrobatics. One of them cursed again and stumbled. "Report," I instructed, rising to my feet and drawing my weapons. I had once more favoured a plasma pistol and a power spear, along with a full complement of grenades, but I had raided my personal armoury and had also equipped myself with a refractor field.
"The servos on my right knee have sustained damage," replied Lucaran, the Lernian who had stumbled. "My armor's readout suggests I will not be able to keep pace with you, especially over rough ground."
I looked around as the rest of my unit responded to confirm that no one else had sustained any significant damage or injury. Rough ground was certainly what we had to contend with for the moment, since this city had clearly been devastated by the conflict. Half-shattered buildings and rubble-strewn streets stretched in all directions. In the distance I could see a ruined flyover, the centre of which had broken away and fallen to crush whatever lay beneath. "Orspecs?" I asked.
"Nothing of note in the vicinity," Highmore replied, studying his handheld device. "I'm picking up the distress beacon, 100.5 kilometres to the west."
Cunatex had dropped us almost exactly where he'd said he could, but we were still a long distance from where we needed to be. An Imperial Army unit travelling on foot would have taken days to get there. Assuming a reasonably direct route, it would take something in the region of 5 hours for the headhunters and me, and I could have outpaced them. Travelling with the Lernians, however, would slow us considerably, especially if Lucaran was unable to keep pace even with his brethren. It was a choice between speed and hitting power. If we encountered hostiles, the Terminators could give us an edge in combat, but by moving at their pace, we were perhaps more likely to be engaged. Tactical dreadnought armour is not renowned for its stealth capabilities either. "Can the damage be repaired?" I asked Lucaran.
"I'm no adept of Mars, Lord," Lucaran replied. "Besides, it's in the internal workings. I would have to remove the suit."
Another balance. Take the time to attempt a repair now in the hope of improving the performance of Lucaran's armour, or push on immediately at reduced speed. Had the Stormbirds been able to land with us, then we'd have had a tech marine to assist, as well as an apothecary, not to mention transport that would have removed the need for Lucaran to walk far at all. As it was, the 11 of us were on our own. "We will move now at Lucaran's best pace," I informed them. "However, the time may come when we must divide our forces to better achieve our goal." No one argued, and they would not have done, even if I had not been their Primarch. They all understood my logic. My Legion don't seek personal glory like some do, but they knew that at some point, any of them might need to give their lives for us all. For the Emperor. We had been moving through the city for perhaps an hour when we first encountered the enemy. Highmore's Auspex pinged, and we slowed as he inspected it, weapons covering our surroundings. It was no easy task. Even for the vigilant machine spirits within our Mark IV plate, there were a plethora of potential danger points to be aware of in this ruined landscape.
"There's some sort of reading to the north," Highmore said,
but I could hear the uncertainty in his voice.
"It's far from clear, though. It could be the distance or the buildings interfering with the signal. The machine spirit's sight is often clouded and inaccurate in urban areas."
I looked at my librarian. "Gookle?"
"Yes, Lord."
Gookle didn't move, but I knew he would have closed his eyes behind his helm's faceplate, the better to concentrate on his mental picture of our surroundings. His psyker's senses could find the telltale spore of sentient minds, although to do so constantly, in the manner of an Auspex's monitoring program, would have eventually drained him beyond endurance. Only a handful of seconds had passed before he jerked and fell to one knee, and I heard the noise of him retching inside his helmet. The Legiones Astartes are bred for combat and for hardship, and that is as true mentally as it is physically. For Gookle to be so afflicted suggested he had touched a truly hideous mind, and certainly nothing human.
"There," I ordered, pointing at the shell of what had once been a Medicaid facility. "Defensive positions."
My warriors obeyed with alacrity, and Gookle quickly recovered himself and was able to make it into cover with us without assistance. We readied ourselves, our weapons trained on the junction just ahead, which was, according to Highmore's Auspex, the most likely route of approach for whatever was coming. "Gookle," I sub-vocalized, using the comnet so even the most perceptive enemy should be unable to hear my voice. "What can you tell us? What did you perceive?"
"Horror, Lord," the librarian replied with feeling. "I can give you little more than that. But don't let them take you alive."
Even with such a warning in our ears, even having seen many strange and vile things in my time amongst the stars, I was not prepared for what rounded the corner. It appeared to be nothing more than a gigantic slab of flesh, bruised yellow and threaded with purple, that hovered above the ground by some means which I was unable to determine. On its back was a semi-transparent bulge, which I instructed my armor's optics to zoom in on. What I made out caused me to clench my teeth in horror. Human heads. The thing bore as a part of itself, on what I would have to consider to be its back, a sack of decapitated human heads.
"Throne of Terror,"
Jar Tenor muttered in horror.
"What is that?"
"Xenos filth,"
Kanan growled.
"Hold your fire," I whispered. "We gain nothing by engaging."
The thing continued to float forwards, its wet, fleshy surface rippling as it did so, then began to turn towards us. It had the air of an automaton, rather than something responding to external stimulus, and I had a sudden image of countless versions of this thing prowling the ruined world, looking for victims of the Rangdan attack or survivors. Presumably its vile masters would feed upon the heads.
"Here comes the rest,"
Highmore voxed, and my helm sensors picked up the clatter of metal on rockcrete a second or so before a pair of new constructs came into view. While the first Xenos was disturbing, these were utterly grotesque. Each moved in a skittering, hurrying gait on three legs of jointed metal that terminated in a sharp point at the bottom, while the tops blended somehow seamlessly into a pallid, stalk-like fleshy body, in which sat a bestial, fanged maw, surrounded by whipping tendrils.
"Hold,"
I whispered again. Every fibre of my being screamed at me to destroy these things. But I was not here to cleanse this world. I was here in search of one particular soul, a soul who might never be found if we were overwhelmed in combat. The two new constructs, warriors or guards perhaps, skittered on ahead of the larger vehicle, if such a word could be applied to something so organic. They drew level with our place of concealment, and I knew with certainty that none of my warriors had been so incautious as to make a movement or a sound. And yet the mouth of the nearest twitched around towards us.
"Hold."
The construct launched itself at us, covering the ground towards our position with sickening speed.
It was neither fast nor agile enough, however, to evade the bolter shells that buried themselves deep into its trunk as the headhunters opened fire. I had no intention of reprimanding them, since stealth was patently of no further use to us in this moment. The shells detonated, blowing great chunks of flesh from the construct's torso, but although it shrieked like a wounded animal, it still came on. One of its tendrils flashed out, the end sharpening and hardening into a bone harpoon as it did so, and speared through a shattered window to punch clean through Eltan's breastplate. I ignited my power spear and sheared through the tendril. An Unhai's Volkite charger deflagrated the beast the moment before its full mass hit the building. But the construct's cries were echoed as a third came into view. Neither this one nor the second leapt to attack in the same manner, however. Instead, they protruded bulbous metallic muzzles from within their forms and opened fire. I had not expected such technology from things that looked so bestial, and that was my failing. We threw ourselves to the floor as beams of bilious green energy whipped out and raked across the Medicaid facility, vaporizing entire sections of rockcrete and dropping more upon us as the pieces above suddenly became unsupported. I lashed out with my spear and sliced apart a chunk of column that had been about to crush Highmore. "Grenades!" I ordered, and my headhunters obeyed, hurling venom spears through what remained of our cover towards the enemy. I had no idea whether the toxic crystal shards would trouble the sloth constructs, but the explosives by themselves drew whistling shrieks. The blast ceased momentarily, and in that moment I made my move. I dived out of the shattered window through which Eltan had been struck and hit the ground rolling, then came up and smote the nearest warrior with my power spear, a two-handed strike using the greatest reach of the haft as though I was wielding an over-length axe. Grotesquely powerful though the construct's weaponry was, its body offered little more resistance to the disruptor edge of my weapon than did the air itself, and I carved through it diagonally to leave it severed in two parts. Pincer-tipped metal tendrils erupted from the sides of the harvester construct, for so I had to think of it, as it became aware of a potential target for its function. It began to float towards me, but I ignored it for now in favour of the other warrior, which was already scuttling sideways to get a better line of fire. Dercius followed me out of the ruined building, his bolter aimed at the warrior. Two rounds struck it and blew away chunks of flesh, but, as with its fellow, the construct survived long enough to fight back. It fired its beam weapon, and the energy struck Dercius. His armour blistered away. He had enough time to begin to scream, and then his flesh followed in kind. Such power was astounding, but I didn't let it slow me. I was moving before the ruined corpse of my headhunter had hit the ground. I sprang upwards, landing atop the harvester construct and severing with my spear a tendril that reached for me as I ran down its length, then fired a bolt of plasma from my sidearm that burned a hole clean through the warrior construct. It howled again, but now staggered drunkenly, and I vaulted off the harvester to bisect it as I had its companion and put an end to this. Behind me I heard the roar of Volkite charges, as the Lernians engaged the harvester, now I was clear of it. A bolt of savage green energy struck me from my left while I was in midair. My refractor field turned the blow, but the force of the impact knocked me sideways into the rubble of a destroyed building next to the Medicaid facility. I twisted out of the tumble it had sent me into and landed on my feet, then leapt out at the construct that had killed Dercius and sliced it in two with a single blow of my spear on the way past. I had landed again, and sent a ravening bolt of plasma at the being that had struck at me before I had even registered its true nature. One of the maggot men was here. It was tall, closer to 3 meters than two, with two arms and what appeared to be two legs beneath its dark hooded robe. But any similarities it might bear to humanity vanished once you saw its exposed flesh. Its hands, in one of which it clutched a corroded scepter, were both masses of maggots, and where the face of a human would be was simply a blank mass of writhing worms. It was repulsive, but it now had a hole in its torso the width of my arm, where my plasma pistol had burned clean through it. Unfortunately, this appeared to trouble it not at all. It raised its scepter, and green energy played around the staff again. I sprang to one side as it fired the strange weapon, by a means I could not discern, and I heard a hissing sizzle as a section of wall past where I had just been standing was reduced to dust by the beam. I had no intention of chancing my refractor field against the sloth's offence a second time, for such devices were temperamental at best. To my left, the harvester had suffered horrific damage, but it clearly lacked pain receptors, since it ploughed into my warriors anyway. The Lernians hacked chunks of it loose with their power axes, but it continued to fight. Its tendrils seized Jar Tenor and yanked him towards the fanged maw that abruptly opened up within its mass. He fired his bolter on full auto, and a power axe severed one of the appendages grappling him, but not swiftly enough to prevent him from being plunged headfirst into the harvester's form. There was a grisly snapping noise as the Xenos construct's razor-sharp fangs severed the neck seals of his armor, and then his headless body was tossed carelessly aside. The horror and distraction of witnessing such a spectacle cost me, for the sloth lashed out at me again with its weapon. This time my refractor field did not activate, and although my reflexes were sufficient to ensure only a glancing hit, I could not prevent the energy beam from striking the right side of my chest as I threw myself downwards. The ceramite of my chest plate burned away in that millisecond, and the energy tore into my flesh. The pain was excruciating. Although I had been burned before, by fire and by acid, this was as though the very molecules of my body were being ripped apart. I dropped my spear as my flesh burned away down to the bone, and agony suffused my arm. But even such Xenos-spawned foulness was not enough to completely incapacitate someone created by the master of mankind, and I fired back. The sloth was inhumanly fast, and swayed aside from the shot, although the plasma bolt took off its right arm halfway up. It seemed to pay the injury no mind, and charged towards me as I staggered back to my feet. A hail of bolter shells erupted from my left, as Hymor and Gukul opened up. The creature somehow flattened its body to slide under the shots, stretching out towards me and then snapping upright again before even I could properly react. I tried to bring my plasma pistol to bear on it, but its damaged right arm reformed and seized my wrist to force it upwards. It swung for me with its scepter, and I blocked its arm with mine, yelling in pain as the impact jolted my abused flesh, and managed to grip its wrist with my right hand in the same manner as it had hold of my left. However, the Xenos was obscenely strong, and I was injured. Its flesh writhed under my grasp, and I struggled to keep hold of it. Then my helm began to flash warnings at me, at the same time as smoke started to rise from my gauntlets. The sloth was exuding some form of caustic fluid from its own body, which was eating away at the ceramite. It would reach my skin in a matter of moments. To my horror, the thing made a sound that was an approximation of a human chuckle.
"Time to die, meat thing," it hissed, in a voice of mucus and rot, speaking mangled but recognizable low Gothic. "I will enjoy your flesh."